You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. Normally on a Thursday, it would be the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro and Nick Kunze, but today it's just David Shapiro. So we'll have to settle for a second best, I suppose, in terms of numbers, that is, David. When we spoke earlier, you spoke about some numbers that you've been looking at. I'd like to hear about them, please, from the Stock Exchange News Service.
You know, I've been quite intrigued by Mondi because, as we've been talking about in commodities, you know, lumber prices have gone up. But what I wanted to find out is if there was any spillover into what Mondi does, which is really make packaging. But they cut down trees and convert the timber into paper, which becomes part of their corrugated board. And they've been very busy, and they're quite bullish on their statement. Yes. But there's no suggestion that the massive increase that we've seen in building lumber has actually passed through to places like Sappi and Mondi, or that's what I'm looking for. But there was no suggestion that this was happening because, in fact, I think paper prices were actually coming down. Look, import costs are going up for other reasons, mainly because of energy prices and currencies and so and so. But, you know, at the end, the shares, I thought it was a fairly buoyant statement for the first quarter, but market marked it down about 2.8%. So I'm not sure what was happening. That's what I was looking for, Lindsay, but I haven't, you know, it doesn't seem that it's really affecting the paper producers or the, as in Sappi's case, you know, viscose and other areas of the market, newsprint that they're involved with. So I've got to investigate. I still want to know where it's going to follow through, because certainly commodity prices are rising, which we discussed the other day on a broad front. The iron ore price just keeps roaring up.
Isn't it 200 now? Isn't it close to 200?
It's close to. It must have crossed there. I just looked at the June future. The June future was at about 197. And, you know, this goes completely against consensus. When I say consensus, I'm talking the so-called expert views, you know, not me or Wayne or anybody having a guess at where the price is. Most of the commodity producers believe that things will be a lot looser there and prices will come down. And in, just in an article that, will be in the hopefully Business Day tomorrow, I was looking at forecasts. My whole article is around forecasts. And I was in Martin Creamer's Mining Weekly, Fitch, you know, the famous Fitch, the rating agency. Of course, they do risk research. They were saying February, which is no more than 2 months ago or, you know, a couple of months ago, said, no, you know, iron ore prices will probably average about 120. Then they're heading south, you know, from there because of excess, slowing demand and excess supply. And, that they stuck their neck out with a 120. It's 180. I mean, it's 190 at the moment.
It's 200. So let's call it 200.
Call it 200. So it just shows you how, you know, everybody's kind of got this commodity cycle totally wrong. We're now picking up on it. Everyone's picking up now as things improve in the global economy. But, at that stage, I mean, no one thought we'd get anywhere close to where we are now.
Have a listen to a chat that I've just concluded with a chap called George Cheveley from 91 in London, a commodities expert. And why I like talking to people like George is because he used to work in the commodity business. He used to work for British Steel. So he understands commodity cycles. Yeah. He understands buying and selling. He understands prices and lead times and that sort of thing. And he was talking about restocking. And you've almost got the perfect scenario here. That's not what he says. This is what I'm saying. I think that, you know, you've got this enormous amount of restocking coming up because of the lack of demand before. And also you've got the new demand because of the projections for global gross domestic product increases. In other words, economic growth. So it's a very interesting interview. I'll send you the link. But anyone that wants to do it, read it or listen to it rather, go to strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Other ones as well. Anheuser-Busch came out with their results today. The share price up 4.3%. This is not a small company. This is one of those giant ships that they're not nimble. They don't accelerate and decelerate very fast, and they turn very slowly. But Anheuser-Busch today obviously delighted the market.
It did. And it's interesting because we're struggling to understand what happened during lockdown and how people's tastes changed, how their spending habits changed. And I think it's going to take some time before we're able to draw a line through the results and through markets and understand, you know, where we're heading. Because, I mean, this was a company that was really battling, dragged down by debt, dragged down by also, I think, slow demand for beer, or their beverages, and also by the advent or introduction of craft beer. Remember, it was attacking them in all different areas. And suddenly you come out with these results where their premium beers, where Corona, Stella Artois, and Budweiser itself did brilliantly. I mean, really, really did well in the first quarter. So you start to ask yourself, listen, is this their marketing? What changed? But, I mean, it was a good result. I look at results now and I'm saying, yes, we know where we've come from. Where are we heading to? You know, to me, it's still a challenge. I can't, you know, I'm scared to commit myself and say, oh, this is the end. Lindsay, the difference is that we're not, you know, I manage pension money. By pension money, I don't mention pension funds, but most of my clients are elderly. I mean, middle aged. We've got no youngsters. So I haven't got any hipsters like Nick Kunzer or anything like that.
He's not a hipster. He's in his 40s, for goodness sake. Sorry, Nick, if you're listening.
You know, or trading for chaps. So most of mine, I have to be careful, and I've got to be sure that anything I buy is on a sustainable path. In other words, the earnings are sustainable. They're going to track upwards. They might slow down some years and so on. And I still think we're in an area now where it's very erratic and volatile, and it's going to take time before we can actually determine who the winners are and losers are.
And also determine which of the trends that have become entrenched over the last year and a bit, and which were the ones that are going to fall to the wayside and just be a moment in time. But I think there are certain trends, especially when I look at the TV about people going back to work, and some people don't want to go back to work. You do, but lots of people don't. So that it's been an extraordinary year, and fund managers will actually earn their seven figures over the next year or so, working out where the demand trends are and what's going to be the future.
Yeah, that's the challenge. And you can't just – yes, we can get very excited. MTN came out with their – numbers yesterday, and everyone was pumped up and beat up, and you know. And I'm saying, hold on a sec. This is a company where, you know, over 3 years, I mean, if anything, you don't know what's going to come in the next month or next day. Which country is going to have a go at them? And they trade in a number of different jurisdictions in Africa, and there's always issues. So I'm saying, you know, you want a consistent path of earnings. Like they showed yesterday, before you say, okay, I'm happy with where they're going. Because we can get very carried away with one quarter, and then suddenly you find next quarter, this government's having a go at them. It's a Turkish government, or it's the Ethiopian government, or it's a Ghanaian government. Something's happening. Yeah. And I worry about it. And that's why I'm saying it's very easy. You know, we discuss results here, et cetera, but I think that it's going to take some time of normalization, you know, when we get into, when we get out of lockdowns and get back to work and everybody's forgets that the virus ever existed, then we're going to see which are the winners and which are the losers. But it's very erratic at the moment. You know, that applies to tech as well, Lindsay. You know, tech is not unique. You know, it's also going to be, are we going to continue to play games? Are we going to continue to use Zoom and Teams? And, you know, will they be able to actually keep their viewers, like Netflix, you know? Will Netflix still be Netflix? Will it still be able to increase subscribers? Will it still be able, number one, to produce the kind of shows that are going to keep subscribers interested.
I still think it's at the top of the pile because, you know, I had my free trial. We've spoken about this before with Nick. I had my Apple TV free trial and I was trying desperately to get out of it, but I've worked it out since then. or my subscriptions facility on my iPhone. I got rid of my £84.99 a month thing, which I don't need. I still think Netflix is right at the top, and because it produces its own content, because it is so, I mean, it's putting so much money in every single month to the production side of things and producing unique stuff for Netflix. So I still think Netflix is going to be the one. Wouldn't you say that?
I can't say it. You know, I think there'll be two winners, Netflix and Disney. But I promise you, they've got to keep producing winners.
Yes.
You know, they've got to find something that keeps people, because don't underestimate Queen's Gambit. You know what that did for them. It was a massive winner.
The chess story.
And,
yeah.
Yes. You know, so when you get a program like that, or you know, other ones that they've had, that draws people in.
Yes.
And draws new subscribers. So you've got to keep ahead of the game with kind of productions like that. So, and the competition's intense, and it applies to Disney as well. You know, it's the same thing. They've got to keep coming out with a couple of winners every year. By winners, I mean something that
blockbusters.
You know, blockbusters. Sure. Yeah.
Very good. Let's have a look at terms. By the way, just on the subject of craft beer.
Yes.
It's a nice idea. And you mentioned the word hipster earlier on with reference to Nick Kunzer, our friend and co-broadcaster. He's not one, but anyway. My landlord came over last, I'm moving flat at the moment, and he came over to say a formal farewell to me, and he brought a load of craft beers over from a Rotterdam brewery. Oh my goodness me, they were terrible. I cannot stand craft beer. Give me a black label, a good old South African brewery's black label any day. I don't need these things that they say, oh, it's got a hint of cranberries and it's very hoppy and that sort of thing. No, it's rubbish. I know you're not a beer drinker because you're a healthy
beer.
Fellow, but I drink beer. But this was awful.
I love Peroni, and I love Peroni's my best, and I like Heineken. So I like the traditional, what do
the
you call it? You know,
beers.
The premium. The premiums,
exactly. Anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Sibanye-Stillwater. I know you speak to Neil Froneman occasionally when you're on a show with him, when he's a participant. Operating update for the quarter ended 31st of March. Share price up around about 1.2%. We've spoken. We've lauded Froneman for a long time now. And I still think that he needs to be lauded. It's a great story.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? We never know what was behind. Sometimes these seem to be charm type of investments that he does, whether he bought Lonmin or whether he bought Stillwater. At the time, we thought he was crazy, and we were concerned about the huge amount of debt that he took on. And you've got to be a very brave man to be able to go to bed at night with that kind of debt overhanging, you know, without any, in the midst of global turndowns, pandemics, and so on. But it came right.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And he pulled out of it, and credit to him. I mean, it's been a, you know, it's been a wonderful, wonderful story. I love listening to him.
Me too.
He's straight down the line. He's a great miner. He understands mining, and he's from the time that I liked the story when he bought Sibanye, but I never thought that he would make it, because he kind of tripped over his shoelaces a few times before he actually got there, which does happen. But Stillwater, I mean, is just being so phenomenal for him. And I'm sure he'll do it. He's got the base now. And, you know, if you measure where he was in terms of market cap and where he is today, you know, he was never mainstream. Suddenly he's become mainstream, you know, almost a little behind something like Kumba and above Impala, you know, or just thereabouts.
With a very big foreign following as well. And there are two mining events each year that I look at. One is the Mining Indaba at the Cape Town Conference Centre, which is called the Mining Indaba. But there's another one in Australia, and it's called Diggers and Dealers. Diggers and Dealer. And when I think of Diggers and Dealers, I think that's exactly what Neil Froneman is. He's a digger and a dealer, and he's good at both of them. He's not an accountant, but he deals and he digs, and he does it very, very well. Maybe he's been lucky because he was on the cusp of the not commodity super cycle, but the commodity cycle to the upside. And maybe it was luck, but you make your own luck, don't you think?
No, that's what I was going to say. You create your own luck. You know what I mean? You don't. He took calculated risk. He understood the markets and he made the bets and he was prepared to go and stick his neck out and raise money. And as you say, you know, commodities, I've always found that, like gold and platinum and commodities, there's a, it's almost like a subculture, if I could say. It's almost, you know, it's like, property people, Bitcoin people, they're groups. Yeah. And they understand their market and you know, Neil's a king in those areas at the moment. They like him and they'll follow him and always support him. So, he's come out, really on top. You know, all the other miners, if you look at all the other miners, I think generally they've been run by accountants, which they needed to do in order to stabilize them because I think a lot of them were heading the wrong way. But, you know, Kudafani is great as well, I must say. You know, he's come in and he's a proper miner as
Mark
well.
Mark Kudafani being the CEO of Anglo-American.
CEO of Anglo-American.
PLC, yeah.
He's a
good Australian chap, one of the few.
Yeah. And, but you know, they're delightful to listen to and they understand what they're getting involved with. So you want to support those kind of people.
Goldfields operational update for the quarter end, and the share price up 3.1%. Goldmine is doing well. I don't know if you look at that one, but anyway, we don't need to.
Well, you know, Chris Griffith has taken over there as well.
Yes.
And it's also a big move for him because he was the original Kumba man and then moved to Anglo Platts and now to Goldfields. So he's also a person, you know, that has left behind decent legacies, you know. So one's going to watch where they go, you know, what he does.
And any other numbers you've been looking at?
There was Transaction Capital, there was Karoo. I haven't been able to go through all of them in the kind of detail that I want to because I like to look for the story.
Mm.
But, you know, nothing really outside of that. I'm just looking at where the markets were and what stood out.
Well, let's just look at the spot prices now. Karoo, I still don't understand how the marketing company came up with Karoo with five O's on Karoo. Yeah, I mean, five or four, whatever it is. I mean, I still think that's rather silly, but good luck to them, whatever they do. Let's have a look at the spot prices now. The dollar rand is 14.22. The British pound against the rand is 19.73. The euro rand is 17.14. The euro dollar is 120.55, that dollar under pressure again. British pound against the dollar is flat at 138.80, that's the cable. Gold price, goodness me, look at this thing. Oh, my goodness me, look at this thing. Never mind Goldfields operational update. It's all to do with the gold price. 1816, up $40 an ounce in 24 hours. The platinum price is up 24 to 1254. Palladium, I don't know if you've got that. I've got 20.
It was down slightly, yeah.
Yeah, down a little bit.
You know, it hit 30 and it's back. I've got 2930, which was down about 1.5%.
I've got
the one that went up, Lindsay, silver.
Oh yeah,
silver very strong, was up 3.25%. You know, we don't normally watch it. We're not silver people in South Africa. We never have been. It's always been an American market.
Yes,
but that's also been very strong.
Very good. It's also a punter's market.
Totally.
West Texas crude is down 0.7% to 65.20. Actually down 2/3 now. It's just updated. $65.21 per barrel. Brent crude oil is $68.59 per barrel, which is down just over 0.5%. You haven't got Bitcoin because we don't look at that. Let me look at that CRB index because I've just, as I said to you earlier on, conducted this very interesting conversation with a commodity expert in London. But my screen is not doing it, so I'm going to go straight to the US 10-year. The US 10-year bond, 1.56. It's 20 basis points away from where it was, you know, a month ago, 1.75. So people saying despite the commodities boom and despite the inflationary implications of that commodities boom, interest rates coming down in the States again. I don't know.
I must read something to you because I follow Capital Economics. It's a service that we get and I enjoy them.
Yeah.
I like them. They, you will know them.
I get them,
you know,
as well.
They're highly respected.
Yes.
But, I follow them quite closely and, here's, this is what came out. You know, they said that that Powell's resolute, saying the burst of inflation will prove temporary, and that inflation
transitory,
will drop to
2%.
Yeah, that's what Powell says.
Yeah.
Capital economists come out and say, listen, we're not convinced. Given the breadth of upward prices, not just prices, but wages too, we believe this will develop into a sustained wage price spiral.
That's the key.
So that's the worry. Wages is the big worry, not lumber prices or anything. And they expect core prices to exceed the Fed's target over the next few years. But, and this is where they come out with a but, they say the Fed is focused on achieving its inclusive full employment goal. So don't expect the Fed to begin hiking until 2023 because of that. Oh. So this is going to be here. Now, what I'm saying, that's, you know, that's going to be the interesting debate. You know, you're going to see this. No, I'm not fighting with you. I'm merely saying, you know, this is, the Fed is going to remain resolute and hold on until they get the so-called full employment and that. But for the next 2 years, until we get that, you're going to hear every day the debate about inflation. It's going to be such a dominant theme, that and clean air. What do you call it? You know, carbon emissions, hydrocarbons, all of those. We're going to be battered with those two themes.
A new high on the Commodity Research Bureau Index as we speak.
Yeah.
217, let's call it, and it was 112 13 months ago. Keeps on going up. I still believe I'm going to win our bet. And David, as I've said to you yesterday in a message to you, that the KLM KLM is my preferred carrier. You can book it now if you want to, because you'll probably get it cheaper.
You can get very cheap rates, yeah.
Exactly, sir. Okay, so we got
that.
What's the Dow, the Nasdaq, and the S&P doing as we speak?
Funny enough, the S&P has actually moved up. I'm surprised, because it was it's just interesting, because it was going nowhere. And Lindsay, whatever we quote now, you can bet by the time New York closes, it's not going to be the same. It could be either a lot higher, or it could be a lot lower. So it's really superfluous. But at the moment, S&P, I've got it 4184, which is up 0.4%. The Nasdaq is absolutely flat, you know, doing nothing. Mm. I haven't got the Dow. I actually haven't got the Dow. The last time I looked, it was also slightly better. But, I mean, it's so difficult to read this, and, you know, because of the fluctuation. The Dow was pretty flat the last time I looked at it.
Okay, let's have a look at the top five major moves on my screen, which is up to date because the market is closed a while ago. Harmony, gold producer, up 5 2/3%. AB InBev, we've spoken about that, up 4 1/3%. Big move for a massive, massive global company. Distell up 4.3%. DRD Gold up 4%. TFG, that's the Fashini Group, up 3.8%. On the downside, Anglo Platts down 4.7%. That's interesting, because it's come way off its highs recently, despite the fact that the platinum price is doing well. Sappi is a 4.3% loser. We were talking about Mondi earlier on.
Yeah.
Sappi came out with their numbers today, which we didn't speak about, but 4.3%.
Oh, yeah, you are second quarter, yeah. Sorry,
exactly.
I missed it.
No, don't worry about that. Don't be soppy about Sappi. 4.3% weaker. Northam down 4.1%, and Mondi down 2.25%. David, give us the JSE closing indices, if you would, the ones that you watch.
Okay, so we've got the All Share Index closed up 0.39% at 67609. Resource Index down 0.5%, which was at 69984. That's interesting. I think it was mainly the big ones that took that down.
Yes.
Although you saw gold was better. The big area is banks, you know, making headway again. The bank index was up about 1.85%, which, you know, was in line with the overall financials. Naturally, the banks influence a financial index, and the industrial index kind of mixed. If I look at the industrial 25, it was up 0.5%. With AB InBev being a big mover. But it's interesting. AB InBev goes up, so does Distell. Sappi, Mondi both down. Interesting. Interesting from I'm still trying to work out the paper story. But, I'm glad Distell's starting to show some form. They've got some good brands, and I just hope these brands are being absorbed in any which way in the rest of Africa or in the markets that they sell.
Yes.
What else?
And what was the value traded? Sorry, I was drifting off there.
It's slightly better, about 21.5 billion.
Not bad.
Again, concentrated on the mainly in Amplats, Impala. MTN was a trade. It came back slightly today after its big run yesterday. Naspers always there, and Sabania. Sabania's always around. You know, just exposing what you said, the foreign involvement or foreign interest in this one.
David Shapiro is from Sasum Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.